Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 1:34 p.m. on Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. Present today are Senator Dunbar, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yunt is excused on other important state business, and myself, Senator Merrick. This afternoon, we will hear from several departments regarding their payment processes. We're looking for ways the legislature can assist in promptly paying grants, contracts, and other payments the state is under obligation to pay. We all want these payments to be made on time. We've invited the Department of Administration, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Department of Health this afternoon. This is going to be a fairly informal hearing and a conversation so we can better understand the situation. We'll hear from the departments who received a list of questions that may have come up during previous discussions, and we can ask additional questions from the committee. So I appreciate all the folks being here today. We'll start with the Department of Administration. We have Eric DeMolin, Director of Finance. And it looks like we also have Tom Mayer, the Chief Procurement Officer with Department of Administration online for questions. Thank you for being here. Please state your name and present us with any information.
Yes, thank you, Chair Merrick. For the record, this is Eric DeMolin. I'm the Director of Finance for the Department of Administration, as well as the Acting Admin Services Director. I did receive a list of questions from the committee, so I wanted to start off just kind of going through those and addressing those, and then just looking through some of the supplemental information I got off of BASIS, figured I would get some color to some other items as well. First and foremost is just kind of going through our payment processes just at a high level. The departments basically approve their own payments in each case. All of our payment processes are outlined in the the Alaska Administrative Manual, AAM 35. And basically what it states is that all departments are responsible for developing their payment approvals and processes at the department level. This is supported through our central admin, systems, IRIS, our accounting system of record. So when we look at payments and the types of payments, they do vary based off of the requirements each of these payments need to be to be met in order to make them eligible, right? So when we're looking at contractors, for-profit entities, we enter into these contracts, obviously in good faith, but they are not governed specifically in most cases by some sort of spending restrictions or program performance, for example, right? We get a lot of federal funding across the state, and that's basically given to a lot of nonprofits or those that are delivering services to the public through pass-throughs. And we have granting units in each one of our federal funded agencies that basically draft these grant agreements each and every year and then basically come to agreement with some of these nonprofits across the state. At that point, the nonprofits or those providing services are required to give status reports and make sure that they're in compliance with the federal rules and regulations that govern these granting dollars and have to submit those as part of their payment requests. So when we're looking at payments themselves, there's multifaceted kind of approach to this. There isn't one single answer to why we're seeing delays in one area versus the other. And we see that these processes are decentralized, so we don't have a like bird's eye view of all the granular issues that go into some of these delays. But usually you'll run into program compliance as being a primary issue, being able to get the necessary documentation to support these payments or make them compliant for the federal funding we receive, so on and so forth. So there's a variety of different issues. And I'm looking behind me, I see the Department of Health is here. They manage over 200 grants, so they could speak to that probably in a lot of detail, as well as Commerce and Community manage quite a bit of grants themselves. Each one of the granting agencies from the federal government basically has their own cognizant agency they work with here at the state. They will have varying requirements just with those entities themselves, right, and what they require in order to make payments or to remain compliant with various grant programs. So when we're looking at those payments, we appropriate to the departments on that appropriation level, right? The legislative body appropriates funds each and every year. for the purposes of those appropriations to those departments. Those departments have the legal authority to then spend those funds. So when we're looking at trying to build efficiencies in payments, we try to get that to the lowest signature authority within the department to be able to process payments the most effective way possible. Right, so each department identifies signature approvals and identify their own approving authorities within the department to be able to process payments to their legal appropriations. Those are then submitted to a central agency in some cases. So I know that we've chatted a couple times, and I want to say thank you to Tom for being online through prior committee meetings. We do have shared services that processes payments on behalf of agencies. For those payments that are deemed to be in scope, right? Most private or for-profit entities are going to be paid through shared services, kind of deemed to be in scope for those payments. When we're looking at grants or some federal dollars that require kind of this higher scrutiny in order to make sure that those payments are valid, a lot of those are actually going to be out of scope and are paid at the division levels. So there's some variability there, but for the most part, that's how that payment process works. Regardless of kind of the approval path these payments go through, they get entered into IRIS, our accounting system of record, and then are processed for payments the next day. Most of the payments that we make across the state are through, you know, ACH transfers. We get a lot of those that just go through those wires each and every day. That goes through the nightly batch cycle. If they are cut via check, they also go through the nightly batch cycle. They're printed off each and every morning in our print room here at the state and are then sent out to the address on record.
Thank you for that. Can you give an example or just a few examples of what for-profit organizations and what nonprofit organizations Department of Administration would deal with as opposed to other departments?
Yeah, so the Department of Administration doesn't deal a lot with any sort of granting programs itself. We're a pass-through agency, and we provide a lot of services, but those services are generally for the public as a whole, and we don't segregate kind of in between, if that makes sense. Best examples that I could give of kind of a private entity, so to speak, would be Microsoft, right? We have contracts across the state with Microsoft for our Microsoft enterprise licenses, and we have those contracts, you know, over multiple years. Don't deal a lot with nonprofits, but a nonprofit that was doing any sort of public service, we'll say sewing whiskers on cats, right? Like if they lost their whiskers, we get a federal grant to be able to help these cats. We would then do pass-through funding to then give that to the veterinarians that specialize in that particular activity. And you could use that for whatever, you know, basically granting program you can think of. And so those processes, when we're looking at admin, we're kind of an arm's length away because those granting funds, let's say if it goes to health and social services or family and community services, They manage those grants independently within their own shops, right? They would then put out grant solicitations. They would find the appropriate vendors or service providers for these particular funds. They have an application process, final agreement. We then get into an agreement with set parameters around each one of these grants that the nonprofit would then have to abide by to ensure that we are remaining compliant with these funds and then are then passed through in a reimbursement mechanism, right? So they have to show that these activities happened before we're cutting payment. In most cases, most federal granting agencies require a reimbursement process as to front funding, so to speak, these initiatives. Most of them are reimbursement.
Okay. All right, please continue.
Okay. So when we look at some of the information that was provided, a lot of it kind of it makes a lot of sense, the information the committee was provided. The one thing I did want to mention is that when we're looking at the Department of Admin, it was mentioned through the Folker Group, and I don't know if I butchered that, apologies. Hopefully that kind of outlined why administration kind of wasn't named as part of this process, right? So all these payment requests are going to be going through the administrative arm of the cognizant agency that manages these grant payments. Some of these grant payments do come through the Department of Administration. I will say that our average processing time for every single agency for the state is less than 5 days. So when we're looking at the prompt payment requirements by a lot of these different vendors and agencies, I could confidently say that we're getting through them fairly quickly at admin in our central payment process within SSOA.
That's good news.
So as we go through, just some other items just for the committee itself, I did mention that our payment processes are outlined in AAM 35. When we're looking at invoice routing or payment approvals, AAM 30.060 is a payment approval administrative item that kind of governs this. And so basically all that it states is that each agency must develop approvals and procedures to meet their organizational requirements. Signature records and these delegations of persons authorized to approve payments are required to be kept on file for the, by those agencies in their fiscal offices. And each agency might establish other guidelines in order to better, I guess, be consistent with the security around their payment approval processes. So it's pretty open for agencies to make a, you know, their approval process, I guess, as detailed as they find it necessary to remain compliant. And with that, that's what I've got from the Department of Administration. I wanted to open it up with any other potential questions that you have.
Super. Thank you for that. Any questions from the committee? Great. Well, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. And thank you to Mr. Mayor as well for being online. Next, we'll have the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This is the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. It processes more than $1 billion in grants and funding. We have, who's with us today? Ms. Hannah Lager. And Ms. Sandra Muller is online. So welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and begin any remarks that you would like to share.
Perfect. Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The department administers a variety of grant programs under a wide variety of statutory authorizations, everything from community assistance grants, grants to municipalities, grants to named recipients, national forest receipts. All in all, that's about $1 billion portfolio, as you mentioned. It's hundreds of grants from a variety of different fund sources. Many of those are general fund grants. Some of them are federal grants, as Director DeMoulin referenced. We also are subject to multiple state statutes related to purchases, as well as AAM guidance, as he also mentioned. And different staff in the department are responsible for different levels of those payment reviews. So for grant payments, that request comes in from a grantee to the grant staff. They review it. They review it for program compliance. Did they do what they needed to do for it? Once they've completed that review and approved the payment from the program perspective, they send it over to our fiscal team for processing, where we put it into the accounting system and then process that, which takes a certification action as well. Invoices for payments that we make in the department are received by staff in multiple divisions. They receive those invoices directly, and they submit them over to Director DeMoulin's Shared Services section for payment after they've reviewed and approved them and made sure that the coding is on there and that they have the appropriate delegated approval. We do process some of those in-house, and what I would say also in addition to invoices is we really have been pushing our staff to use purchasing cards as much as they can, whenever they can, whenever it's appropriate, and keep that approval at the lowest level so that the vendor can get paid almost immediately, and then we just have to do a processing action on our end afterwards. We do have processes in place for systems and approvals department-wide, so we make sure that we have appropriate separation of duties, which really means that at least two people are involved in every transaction, which is a thing that we need to do as good government, make sure that we are following all the rules, but also that does, you know, add an additional layer of complexity in each payment process. We also make sure that we review and make sure that somebody has the appropriate delegated approval and that somebody has said, yes, it's okay to spend this money. We do actually need this thing for the state. So we're making sure that we're receiving items correctly and separating those responsibilities to make sure there's no fraud in our system. As I mentioned, we try to use purchasing cards as much as possible, which really does speed that payment to vendors, which I think you'll see when I talk about our statistics in just a minute. I would say one thing that I think this piece of legislation has highlighted for us is that there are some data points mentioned in it that we don't currently track in our system. And that is was an interesting thing to look at and recognize that we don't see when a grantee mails their request into us, right? Sometimes they email it, but from some of these smaller communities, they may come in the mail. We don't see when that happens. We see when we receive it, right? We can see that on the physical piece of paper, but we don't record that receipt date in our accounting system. And part of that is because we track the invoice date, and we do that to make sure that we're not double paying things. So we track the date that they're billing us for versus the date that we actually received it. So that made pulling data for this to kind of see how we were doing in relation to this legislation a little bit challenging because there are some data points mentioned that we just don't have easy access to without reviewing each individual payment to see what was on that attachment. We also don't have the communication dates that are mentioned in the legislation, which I think that's a valuable thing to monitor, and I think this is really highlighted for us some areas where we may want to look at our processes and say, should we be tracking when we communicate back to grantees, things like that. I would also say, looking at the data for this, it became very apparent that while we use that invoice date and the invoice number to make sure that there aren't duplicate payments, but for a lot of our activity, there's only one payment made, right? It's one vendor that we're buying one thing from. So we don't have to worry about duplicate payments as much. And so sometimes we found there's a number of different data inconsistencies in that date. So when I looked at our averages, they were not there were some clear outliers in the data when we looked at the averages, because it's very easy to key in 2032 instead of 2023 when you're entering an invoice. So it highlighted some great challenges in our data right now, and I think some things that we'll be looking to improve on as an agency going forward. We also just haven't used that invoice date, as I mentioned, for this type of review, and that's part of why this hasn't been something that we've been paying as much attention to as far as the status of that invoice date for those single payments, because we just haven't been using it to try to track this type of information. So I did look at the data for our department, and I'm pleased to say, really, that for 24 and 25 combined, because we wanted to make sure we captured multiple periods in there and seasons of the year, 97% of our operating grant payments are made within 30 days, which is exciting for us. But as I mentioned, it does highlight some challenges in our data. For example, we issue seafood development tax payments in early July each year. We do that calculation in April. And so when we entered that into the system last year and paid it on July 17th, within 17 days of the appropriation being effective, the invoice date on that was April 17th when we calculated it. So that looks like a late payment. It's actually within 17 days. I'm really pleased with that timeline to get grant payments out the door. So as I mentioned, we will really be looking at that invoice date going forward and seeing if there's an improvement we can make there. I also would say 90% of our non-travel and non-P-card activity as also paid within 30 days. That's about 19,000 transactions over 2024 and 2025. Very pleased with that stat. Clearly 10%, that's not perfect. We have some room to go, but we process a high volume of payments. We'll be looking to improve that process wherever we can. Some things we've done for that so far are moving towards making sure invoices come to shared email inboxes, right, rather than going to an individual who may at some point depart state service and those invoices go off into the ether. As well as I mentioned, moving as much as we can to P cards and then doing those on a review and audit basis, making sure clearing them to the appropriate bill, making sure the invoice is entered correctly, all of that, doing that after the fact so we can make sure that those vendors do get their payments appropriately and that we avoid late fees, because we don't want to spend money on late fees if we can avoid that. I would just say I appreciate the sponsor and the committee for reviewing this topic. I think this was a really good opportunity to kind of review where we're at as a status check and see where we're doing well, where we have some room for improvement. I look forward to doing future reporting on it.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the P card is basically a credit card, correct?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you. So who pays the credit card fees when you pay using a P card?
Yes. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. We pay the credit card fees when we do that, and there is adjusting language in the operating budget each year that lets us adjust our authority to cover those. I would say it's pretty incidental in the grand scheme of our operations over the year. I would say in 2024, I didn't pull the exact number, but I think it was less than $400,000 for all transactions, and that's both paying transactions and receiving revenue, where we receive a lot of credit card payments in the department.
Thank you. If I can continue, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
So that was my next question. What is the total amount of fees that the state eats? And you said $400,000, I think.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, my recollection is that in 2024, it was about that ballpark of $400,000. Mm-hmm. But again, that is for high volume of incoming fees for professional licensing and business licensing, as well as our outgoing transactions. They're all kind of rolled together.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Yeah, and just a thought process, because I think of myself and individuals who use credit cards to pay bills, and now what they're making us do is we pay the bill, but we also pay the credit card fee at the same time. So have you ever thought about that possibility of having the vendors pay the credit card fee and the state could save $400,000? I'm just curious.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I'm very pleased that Director DeMolin is still at the table with me. I think that may be something that is better answered for, by him, or it's possible that that would be a Department of Revenue question, as we don't actually manage the statewide contracts
Thank
for
you.
This.
Yeah, so the chair to Senator Gray Jackson. We do have some different options when we look at how we manage credit card programs statewide. We haven't looked at doing any sort of fee pass-throughs. We've been trying to basically limit the amount of fees that are, you know, coming out of the state of Alaska, just in a general sense. But as we look at trying to utilize different forms of payments or different technologies to hopefully become a little bit better, more efficient as a state, I think it's something that's worthwhile to look over. In terms of the question of how much have we paid historically, the Division of Finance does manage the credit card program, and I could get back to the committee in writing to total dollar amounts and what we're seeing in terms of fees. Could also give some color in terms of those contracts, benefits that we get in terms of P cards and going through basically our single vendor when it comes to P cards, so U.S. Bank, what that looks like and what benefits it brings to the state as well.
Madam Chair, may I ask one more question?
Yes, Senator Gray Jackson.
Oh, thank you. And so what benefit do you get from the credit card companies?
Yeah, so through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that I'll have to get back to the committee on, as well as the payments or the total costs of the credit card program and fees.
Right, because my question is, because I think about the benefits that I get using mm-hmm. a credit card is miles. So I'm just curious to know what kind of benefit the state gets by using credit cards. And I have the same question at the municipality level also. But thank you for your presentation, and I appreciate you getting back to us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Okay, I see no further questions. Ms. Mueller, do you have any further comments or additional comments?
To the chair, no. I think that Director Lager handled what we've been doing at Division of Community Regional Affairs. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I agree. She did a wonderful job. So we will move on to our final presenter, the Department of Health. We have Pam Holleran, Assistant Commissioner, Zoe Olson, Grant Administrator, and Jason Grove, Procurement Manager, I believe is online. Hi, welcome to the committee. If you could place yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Pam Halloran. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health. I have a lifeline in the room. Her name is Hillary Porter. She's our Manager of Grants and Contracts for our department. So we might, if the questions become too technical, I might be bringing her up.
Super.
So we're committed to timely payments. We consider our grantees and our contractors partners to the work we do, and so we're committed to this work and to this legislation and to making things better. So this legislation provided us an opportunity to explore what's going on within our department and identify the delays and the gaps. And we've identified those into a few areas. One is overall capacity within our division or within our department. So we have 448 grants and 295 contracts. So within contracts, we're processing $575 million in a year, and that was in FY24. For grants, we're processing $145 million. So volume is a significant factor to the delays that we're seeing. One of the areas that we're working on with our vendors is quality of the invoices. As Director DeMolyan referred to, we are committed to or needing to ensure that invoices are outlining certain things in order to be compliant with our federal partners. And so sometimes delays are associated with going back and forth with our vendors in regard to the quality of the invoices outlining the goods and services that were performed. Training for our staff is another area. We've seen significant turnover. This department, the Department of Health, was the sole procurement department during the pandemic. And so there was a tremendous amount of burnout among our teams for the pandemic, which handled all procurement activity statewide. We've seen some turnover. We have some new folks online that we need to bring up to speed. So, but compared to the past 2 years, we're making progress, and we're pleased about that. We are improving. We've initiated quality training. Hillary Porter, Ms. Porter in the back, has developed wonderful training modules for our team, even for our grantees, where we can bring them in and we can outline for them expectations in regard to payments and reporting and things necessary to ensure that they're paid on time. So, and we anticipate having those initial meetings with our grantees this summer. So, to move into your questions that were provided to us in advance, and thank you very much for that. For processing payments, the department, each division within our agency for contracts has a centralized email box, which is managed by administrative staff. They receive those payments. They provide them to a project manager who oversees that contract, who approves, and then that payment is submitted forward for payment. For grants, our grants are advanced quarterly. Grants funded contract monies or capital monies, excuse me, are reimbursement. But our grants are submitted advanced to our grantees quarterly, which they appreciate very much. The department, as far as does the department write checks or is there another form of payment, our vendors, and perhaps Mr. Dumoulin's hit on this, our vendors select the way their payment is processed within a vendor self-service portal within the Division of Finance. Vendors can log in and they can decide for themselves if they'd like an electronic payment or a written check warrant. So are there different employees processing for-profit and other payments? So for contracts, payments are reviewed and approved by the project director in the division, as I previously said. Once approved, those payments are forwarded for processing within our accounting system. For operating and capital grants, payments are reviewed and approved by a division program manager and our grants administrator. Once they are approved, the payments are processed by the grants administrator in the accounting system. So the next question was differences in processing contracts versus grants. The overall, as far as timeliness, I believe that question was related to timeliness. On average, our department is 31 days late, and we evaluated that for contract payments which went out in FY24, and so for 9,000 individual payments, we averaged 31 days. Past the 30 days requirement. For grants, the department is averaging 11.2 days to process quarterly grant payments. And that's after the reports are submitted by the grantees and they're reviewed by the project manager. Again, we advance those payments quarterly, 25% each quarter. That final quarter is a 20% payment. We withhold 5% to ensure that final reporting is received from the grantees. Let's see here.
We have a question from Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director. When you say average, do you mean the mean or the median? Because I could see a world in which certain contracts take much, much longer to pay, and they sort of drag down or pull up, however you want to visualize it, but skew the average. So is it a median or a mean?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I believe it's a mean. It's an average. You're absolutely right. We do have some contract payments that take a very long time. The data was showed some contract payments which were over 200 days overdue.
Follow up,
Madam Chair. Follow up.
When you say contract in this case, you mean for-profit contracts as opposed to grants? We're talking about paying for-profit contractors in this case?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, yes. We pulled for contracts. It was a little bit easier to pull the data. So for contracts, we pulled from invoice date to payment date for all contracts within FY24.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow up.
So for those contracts that are 200 days late, for example, how often do those result in litigation, and how often do we end up having to pay some kind of damages? Because it seems like we are in breach of our contract if we are that far delayed.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I'm not aware of litigation related to our grants. I don't know if Director Dumling might have some information to share.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Tom Mayer, I hope, is still on the line. I don't know if he has dropped off. But when it comes to contracts that may be out of compliance for a prolonged period of time, he may have a better answer in terms of how often that goes into litigation. Tom, are you still there?
Thank you. Mr. Mayer.
Yes, through the chair. I'm not aware of any claims that would be filed. That would generally come under a contract claim if the state was late like that, and it would be filed with the agency, actually, and then ultimately would land in the Department of Commissioner's office if it was appealed. But I'm not aware of any of those that are ongoing or have been ongoing several years now at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Mayer. Can you place yourself on the record?
Yes, Tom Mayer, State of Alaska, Chief Procurement Officer.
Fantastic. Senator Dunbar.
Yeah, brief follow-up, Madam Chair. Can you sort of help me understand why these folks that are waiting, I mean, it sounds like 8 months or more for payment. And again, we're talking about the for-profit contracts, right? We're not talking about grants in this case. What is it from our end that convinces them not to bring us to court? Are there things written into the contract that prevent them from doing so? Is a good faith belief that they'll be paid eventually and they're worried about jeopardizing future contracts? What, in your professional opinion, prevents them from or encourages them not to sue us when it seems like they have a pretty open and shut case if we are admitting that we are so far out of compliance with the contract?
Mr. Mayer.
Senator Dunbar, through the chair. That's a great question. Not being in an agency that actually processes those types of documents, my department, or my section of procurement property management, we do multi-agency procurement, and each agency themselves, each executive branch agency, has delegation to do their own procurements. So I don't actually ever see the reasons or when those things actually occur. I would say, yeah, you're probably right in the aspect that they may be worried about impacting future business. We don't look at things like that on a procurement method when we're procuring. Past history doesn't really count at that point unless there's been some sort of judgment against that particular entity. But I do think you're probably right. There is some sense of that and the fact that they know they will get paid eventually from the state.
Thank you. Brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunbar.
So for you, Commissioner Halloran, from your perspective of the Department of Health, I think what Mr. Mayer is saying is that sort of those discussions or negotiations are happening at the agency level. So in your experience, do you have any experience working with those kind of far overdue private contractors? And in your experience, what prevents them from litigating those cases?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I can speak to one situation that I've experienced so far. Is we have a partnership with one vendor, and they've contacted me directly over. This is a vendor that represents several vendors, and so they've contacted me directly. And so escalating often does help, where we can work with our divisions, and in those situations, we come up with a way to get them paid timely. We figure out the gap. And we create methods to ensure that those payments occur. These particular items in 2024 that I mentioned, I'm not familiar with the specific circumstances related with those contractors. But you know, we do consider all of our contractors valuable partners and want to work with them and want them to want to work with us.
Yes, follow up.
Would you say the same is true with your grantees?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, as far as our grantees, we are an advantage because we do advance monies. Not all departments have that opportunity because of their federal funding sources have different allowances related to whether they can advance or whether they have to be reimbursed based. We recognize the fact that many of our grantees have small budgets. They're serving very important missions. And so being able to advance those monies on as timely as possible helps us, and we are working very hard to forge extremely good relationships with our grantees.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I think I could provide a couple comments,
please.
If I can, Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, so just for the committee, I would think that when we're looking at, you know, these prolonged periods where we're not paying folks is usually fairly rare. There are a handful of items. If you don't mind, Pam, how many grantees is it that Health manages?
448.
So that's quite a bit. So it truly is a team effort when we're looking at how everything works and some of the system controls as well, right? So out of those 448 grants, we're going to have basically chart of account or these grant structures within the accounting system itself. And it also exists for all these contracts that we pay out as well, where we and Cumber have to set aside these funds. Now, we look at our appropriation structures and the way that they are. A lot of times we could over-obligate or there could be budget errors. There's a lot of management that goes into these to ensure that things are moving timely and need to get addressed. So a lot of times you could see something that potentially locks up and needs a lot of basically collaboration across areas in order to get those quote-unquote freed up or out of these accruals in order for payments to process. So there's quite a bit. But, you know, in terms of what we see out of the system itself, you know, when we're looking at the variety of different payments that go out and the magnitude of some of these or the sheer volume, the majority of them are not taking a significant time delay. Usually we're able to address some of these issues, you know, fairly quickly. We have a lot of good staff across the state. And a lot of what we see in terms of these longer ones are usually some sort of discrepancies in terms of services provided. These are managed, as Tom mentioned, at the department level. For example, I had some of these this year just within one of my own contractors, right? We were in disagreement in terms of the services being provided, and I withheld payment for those reasons. I worked with Tom and his procurement staff in order to get resolution to those. That would be an example of something that took a prolonged period of time where we do collaborate with our contractors. We want to be good business partners as well, right? But if it was determined that, you know, we did owe that, like that could have been one of those marks, right, where it took a prolonged period in order for them to be paid. So there's a lot of different circumstances that really build up to when we see payment delays, and there's just not a good way to really see that granular detail on why something may have happened. To Pam's point, you know, this happened and it escalated to her, but she didn't know, you know, those details. So that's kind of why. I just wanted to kind of add some color there.
Thank you. And Ms. Halloran, I asked about examples. Can you give me some examples of what kind of vendors are on this, you know, ultra-delayed payment? What kind of services they're providing?
Chair Merrick, I can speak to the vendor that contacted me because that's the one I was mostly familiar with. I'm fairly new to the department, so I'm not aware, and I didn't run that report that I could see the vendor name. The vendor that contacted me represents multiple information technology sectors or vendors.
Super. Anything further? Well, thank you so much, Ms. Halloran, for being here. We really appreciate it. And Mr. DeMolin, thank you for your time. I'm going to invite the sponsor, Senator Kawasaki, for Senate Bill 129. And his staff to the table. Why don't you just give us a very brief recap of your bill and why today's information is relevant?
Thank you, Madam Chair. State Senator Scott Kawasaki from Fairbanks, representing District P.
For the record, Jenna Calhoun, staff to Senator Kawasaki.
And I just wanted to state that I appreciate the chair for bringing the folks forward to talk a little bit more about how these contracts work and how payments might be delayed. In researching the bill, we just found that there's other states that do have prompt payment legislation. For instance, New York State. And annually they create a report on a non-for-profit prompt contracting annual report. And this report outlines sort of how well the processes are working within the state of New York. And, you know, just looking at some of the comparisons of what we've heard today on how quickly the state of Alaska compares with New York, they are fairly similar. And, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for late contract payments, and so we get that. I think they're during some times when the state had a lot more cash flow and a lot more money available to it, It might have been easier for individual departments and contracting agencies to be able to realize that money was going to be set aside and that money was going to be there. I know during these really challenging times in our budget, not knowing whether we're going to have the federal money come through, not knowing whether we're going to have state funds to be able to replace those funds, leave us sort of in a tenuous position. And I think every state currently is working sort of similarly at the same process that we are currently in during this this budget. So I do understand from the state's perspective where we're headed. I also do understand and have to voice my support for the folks who came forward from the nonprofit agencies that do a lot of this work. For instance, the assisted living home that requires payments to be dealt with in a prompt situation, and any delays could mean that they're going to have to get out a line of credit, for instance, with their own banks. So I think there's somewhere that we can work together, both with the state agencies and with the administration and with these nonprofit partners that do a lot of the work of state services. And I think that this has at least gotten us to the point where we can say that we're moving forward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Further questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you, and we will take a look at Senate Bill 129 at a future hearing. I see nothing further to come before this committee today. We will adjourn after I let you know that our next meeting will be Tuesday, May 6th at 1:30 p.m. We are adjourned at 2:15 p.m. Thank you.